Great,
it's actually almost time to convene. Good afternoon and welcome to Citizens September 25th, 2018 Audit Committee meeting, publicly noticed in the Florida Administrative Register. Our board and committee meetings are recorded with transcribed minutes available at our website. Please do not place this call on hold. Press star 6 to mute your line and pound 6 to unmute your line. As a reminder, and as noticed in the Florida Administrative Register, the Finance and Investment Committee meeting will convene immediately following the Audit Committee meeting. Our meeting will now convene with roll call, if that pleases the chairman.
Thank you very much, Barbara. That'd be great.
Chairman Betty Brown.
Here.
Governor Mark Dunbar.
Here.
Governor James Holton.
Here.
Governor John McKay. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Barbara. Let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. I could accept a motion to approve the minutes of the June 19th, 2018 meeting.
Move to approve.
And is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. I believe Joe Martins is here to talk about his assurance dashboard and audit report, also the audit control management system consent item. Joe, you have a new format. It was quite impressive. I'm looking forward to you sharing the audits and the format with the group.
Good afternoon, Governors. This is for the record, this is for the internal audit. I'd like to start off behind tab 2 on page 8. And on this page, we provide results based on a rolling audit plan that looks at work completed over the past 9 quarters and work scheduled for the next 2 quarters. We highlight 7 audit engagements which were completed since the last meeting. Of these audits, I'd like to talk about the Centerpoint Access ATM payroll work that we did. The ATM model is used to process and manage payroll benefits, time and labor, and talent management for citizens. Privileged roles within the ATM model allow an assigned user the ability to create and modify employees' salaries, benefits, addresses, and bank accounts. Within the audit, we noted that systems limitations and the complexity of the Oracle roles and permissions contributed to challenges in properly managing user access. Specific corrective action plans have been agreed with management, and these are being implemented. The Office of Internal Audit further scheduled a detailed audit of citizens' payroll processes to ensure that these have not been negatively impacted by this. I'd also like to talk about the results from the social media audit. Here we concluded that procedures are generally well-defined and proper controls are in place. There is, however, a person dependency concern, and it was agreed that a member of staff will be trained as backup. The current social media policy needs to be refreshed, and access to social media accounts will be improved. On page 11, we noted 3 advisory engagements that were canceled, as these were no longer needed by the business. Work currently in progress includes audits of the revised managed repair program, an oversight of approved alternative work arrangements, and Centerpoint user access, focusing this time on finance and the procurement modules. We also have 2 advisories, one focusing on a review of the vendor management office responsible vendor review process, and the second advisory will look at the maturity of citizens' new enterprise planning and delivery methodology. We're scheduled to complete in quarter 1, 2019, includes audits of payroll processes, management of claims, litigation expenses, implementation of adopted IT security audits, IT security standards, and an advisory of coordination and management of data analytics within SIU. On page 13, we provide detail of control deficiency resolution and noted that these receive adequate business focus and are well managed. And lastly, on page 57, we included the consent item to be presented to the board for approval. This consent item is for approval of an amendment to the to upgrade Citizens Audit Management software with the vendor's Teammate Audit Management product to its Teammate Plus product. This upgrade will allow the increased efficiency through enhanced configurability and various components, robust historical insights, work paper versioning, enhanced dashboard reporting, and ease of use on many types of devices. The proposed amendment will result in additional contractual payments of $34,706 over the full 9-year term of the contract, but this will not cause Citizens to exceed the amount previously authorized by the board. The Office of Internal Audit requests approval of the consent item from the Audit Committee for presentation to the board.
May I have a motion to approve the Audit and Control Management System contract 15150017 00 amendment for Walters Kluwer Financial Services?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Do members, do you have any questions of Mr. Martins on his presentation with the new assurance dashboard and the three or four audit reports that are in the package? Okay. Thank you, Joe.
I'd also like to continue with just a short presentation on the Internal Controls Office and the ERM Office,
and then hand over to
Jay Adams. On page 15, I provided progress of the rollout of the Internal Control Framework project. This exercise is scheduled for completion in October 2019. By the end of the year, we will have completed our reviews for 56 of the 71 in-scope processes. Business units commenced with their annual control self-assessments for 37 of the completed processes. These self-assessments focus on the review of control design, which is then followed by an assessment of the control effectiveness. Control deficiencies are reported to the Internal Controls Office and corrective action is monitored by them. As far as enterprise risk management, we would like to note that on page 17 that we are currently implementing our risk management administrative tool. The Enterprise Risk Office further performed a strategic risk assessment with executive management, and through this, 15 strategic risks were identified and are being further developed. Two of these risks refer to the claims processes, and James Adams will present the risk and management action to the committee. Operational risk assessments are progressing well, with 58 of the 72 assessments scheduled for completion by the end of this year. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Joe.
Hello, Chairman and committee members. This is Jay Adams for the record. As Joe indicated, I'd like to go over the claims unit ERM risk that we've identified thus far. The first one I'd like to talk about is claims abuse. And what we mean by that is failure to identify and stay in front of claims abuse schemes that increase litigation costs for Citizens. You've heard the claim reports talk about the non-weather water schemes and claims that have happened, and this is the type of thing that we're talking about here when we talk about these claims abuse items. Some of the mitigation things that we've done so far to try to mitigate that and stay in front of it is we've had our SIU leadership liaison focus on the Florida DFS for PNC industry awareness and reporting, and we work really close with those folks making department referrals anytime that we suspect fraud. We've also done considerable amount of product reviews to recognize contract deficiencies that may provide opportunities for future claim schemes and abuses. So what we try to do is identify those as soon as a trend occurs and start working on making the product language changes. Our UAS leadership team has done a lot of outreach to the agencies to help make them aware of any issues of fraud and to look for and report any trends they may have to our special investigative unit. We've automated our vendor and public adjuster data collection in our claim center or our claims management system to to identify providers. And what we're looking for there is trying to identify relationships. Sometimes we see bad actors working together that create these schemes. We also have put a feedback loop between our non-litigated and litigated claims groups. And the idea there is, as we see emerging trends, we make sure that the non-litigated and litigated teams are both aware of it so that we can develop and build out our strategies to help address those as soon as possible. As with any plan that we're ever going to have in this risk structure, there's always going to be some potential gaps or concerns that we'll continue to have, that we'll continue to keep an eye on. Some of those that we have for our claims abuse are these claims abuse schemes evolve slowly, usually over a period of time. And a lot of times they're difficult to identify. We have created as much reporting and data analytics as we can to try to help pre-identify those, but new schemes, again, evolve very slowly. We continue to look at our product language, and we engage the product folks, our legal, claims legal, and our claims folks to look at the product language to see if there's any areas that can be tightened up to prevent less opportunity for these schemes to occur in the first place. And then we rely on our outside vendors for claim adjustment and litigation handling. And as we rely on those others, we have to do that for scalability reasons. That may obscure some of our trend analysis. We might not see things as fastly as we would like to because we have non-staff members handling a portion of our claims. The second issue that we identified is in our CAT response. And what we're concerned about here is the failure to have adequate resources to respond to a major catastrophe event. As this board is fully aware, last year during Hurricane Irma, we ran into that problem. And, you know, one of the largest causes of it was that Hurricane Harvey hit Texas a few weeks before, and most of the independent adjusters deployed out to that storm. So some of the things that we've been doing to help mitigate this, and again, the claims group has brought this before the full board, we've done significant amount of work in the solicitation field to try to make sure that we secure the right types of contracts for the right resources. We've done that for independent adjusting services, our field inspection services, aerial drones, and we've also made sure in our contracts, for example, the IA fee schedule, that we keep that market compatible all the time to make sure that we can get the resources that we need. We also have established not only a fast-track solicitation and team, we've also set up a processing guide and sent our catastrophe team out to those locations to make sure that they had the infrastructure in place, ready to be responsive in 2018 if we need those folks. We also established some new exact analysis workflows, and those workflows are to help to take pressure off of our claims administrative system as far as doing the assignment, so there's not as much logic needed to make the assignment. And also, the process that we moved to also is an industry standard for independent adjusting services using the exact analysis platform. And again, I just wanted to close here with a few of the gaps or concerns that we still have. As I mentioned earlier, we're always at risk if another state or geography outside the state receives a storm, or if there were multiple storms before Florida were to sustain a hurricane. When we have multiple events, even within the state of Florida, it tends to stress our resources. So if we have adequate resources and we have a prolonged event or multiple events, those resources that are currently engaged, including our staff, become stressed and become less productive over time. We have enhanced our catastrophe response plan by allowing our non-catastrophe team, what we call the managed claim model, to be our first responders when a catastrophe hits. Those resources are already on the ground. They can take claims immediately. But when we do that and start to infuse the claim volume into that team, we always have to take a step back and make sure that we're not doing it to the detriment of non-catastrophe claims. And with that, Joe, I think that concludes my presentation. Any questions?
Members, any questions of Jay Adams?
Jay, this is Mark Dunbar. I only have one quick question and comment, and it is as it relates to how we are watching ourselves on the claims side. I know one of the practices that I think you're doing, but I didn't see in here, is that you are you are regularly monitoring the rate and form filings of other PNC carriers in Florida, right, so that we're watching them to see how they're reacting to various schemes that are out there. Is that correct?
Yeah, Governor Dunbar, for the record, Barry Gilway. Yes, that is correct. We're consistently looking at all of the product of form filings for other carriers and assessing whether the language in those policies would be beneficial. We're also looking prospectively at the potential of the latest cases and what adjustments might be needed to take advantage of the most recent decisions that are handed down, such as the latest DC 4 decision on Restoration 1. So,
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure that was, because I didn't see it in the bulleted items, but I thought that was the practice, Barry. Thank you, and I appreciate it. That's all I have, Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Any other comments from other members? Okay. I will tell you, Jay, I'm very pleased with your handle on getting ahead of those fraudsters. It's hard, but you have a great team, and you're doing a really good job. It's amazing how much of that goes on, but you guys are on it, and I appreciate the amount of work that takes. Also, living in Monroe County, which was Irma's first stop, I can tell you you did a great job on the claims and the CAT response. I know it's always hard when you have hired adjusters and I know you train them, and now and again you have a problem, but I didn't see much of that here, and so I compliment you on that. Good job.
Thank you, Chairman.
I assume we're ready to move on to Jennifer Montero.
Thank you. Good afternoon, committee members. And for the record, my name is Jennifer Montero, Chief Financial Officer. Behind tab 4 of the audit committee material, you'll find the June 30th, 2018 financial results, which consists of the financial summary and the statement of operations and quarterly financial update. Through the first half of 2018 and leading into hurricane season, Citizens' financial position remains incredibly strong despite the $1.3 billion in net incurred losses in LAE resulting from Hurricane Irma in 2017. At June 30th, Citizens' consolidated surplus was approximately $6.5 million with an additional $1.7 billion in pre-event liquidity. $6.5 billion, an additional $1.7 billion of pre-event liquidity, $1.4 billion in private risk transfer, and $2.2 billion of CAT fund coverage. Consolidated direct written premium for the first half of 2018 was $460 million, which is $5.1 million or 1% less than the first half of 2017. This decrease is the result of decreases in combined policies in force, primarily commercial lines policies within the commercial lines account and the coastal account. The personal lines account increased 3.7%, while the CLA and coastal accounts had decreases in PIF of 29% and 13%, respectively. The volume of premiums removed through depopulation was substantially unchanged during the first half of 2018 as compared to 17. Premiums ceded through reinsurance arrangements totaled $240.9 million, which is a $10.4 million less than the same period in 2017. The decline was driven by declines in the cost of private reinsurance, as well as declines in premiums ceded to the CAP fund, both largely due to declines in reinsured exposure and overall declines in risk-adjusted pricing on private reinsurance agreements. On a consolidated basis, losses incurred through the second quarter of 2018 were relatively unchanged as compared to the prior calendar year. By account, the PLA and coastal account did not have any significant loss development on prior accident years, whereas the commercial lines account experienced adverse loss development as a result of settlement of sinkhole losses from prior accident years. While loss and LAE development within the CLA and commercial line policies in the coastal account are less significant to the accident years to which they relate, the diminishing size of the overall commercial lines book of business leaves it more susceptible to material swings in the loss and LAE ratio, as a result of development in prior accident years when the commercial lines book of business was considerably larger. LAE incurred during the current calendar quarter increased as a result of increased resources both internally and externally needed to address continued challenges with non-weather water losses. Recent trends suggest that the fraction of non-weather water claims entering litigation has stabilized but remains within a historically high range of 40 to 50%. Gross losses and LAE attributable to Hurricane Irma were unchanged from the prior quarter and remain at $1.8 billion. Estimated recoveries from the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund are $534.7 million. Estimated recoveries from private reinsurance are $126.4 million within the coastal account. Administrative expenses incurred during the first half of 2018 of $66.1 million were approximately unchanged relative to the first half of 2017 and 13% below budget. The $3.7 million variance and travel expense when comparing the rolling 12-month period ending June 30, 2018 to the same period in 2017 is related to travel costs incurred as a result of Hurricane Irma. These costs include catastrophe response centers, temporary claims locations, and additional travel. However, all Irma-related expenses are reclassified to loss adjustment expense through the ULAE expense allocation. Through the first half of 2018, Citizens expense ratio was 24.5%, reflecting a 0.7% decrease from 2017 and a 1.5% decrease as compared to budget. We anticipate that the actual expense ratio for fiscal year 2018 will be in line with the budget expense ratio of 24.3%. Total invested income was $95.2 million at June 30th, which is roughly $6 million less than the same period a year ago, while total average invested assets declined $2 billion over the same comparable period. Net realized losses were $15.3 million, representing an increase of $11.8 million relative to the first half of 2017. Net realized losses were taken as portfolio managers maintained duration targets across portfolios, reinvested maturing positions, and liquidated existing positions to meet scheduled debt service requirements. This resulted in an increase in realized losses due to overall rising market interest rates, volatility, and fluctuations in credit spreads. It is expected that these short-term realized losses will be more than offset by longer-term increases in overall returns when reinvesting in the higher interest rate environment. And I'll pause for any questions. If there are none, that would conclude my report.
Members, any questions of Jennifer Montero? Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Under tab 5, you have a complaint management statistics. There's nothing there of any substance, so I'll move on to see if there's any new business for the committee. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Is there a second? We're adjourned.